From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
California Chrome with Espinosa going for the whip is still in front. Harrogate trying his heart out. California Chrome from Harrogate, a pulsating climax to the classic. Harrogate takes the lead and wins. Harrogate beat California Chrome.
Nyquist an exaggerator. They're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Classic Empire to the 16th, about a length and a half. Not this time, is gradually wearing him down. Classic Empire, not this time. Classic Empire, Classic Empire by a neck, not this time. They finished a straight in front of the rest.
It is Exaggerator in front. No, Nyquist switches back to the outside. Exaggerator down to the 16th pole. The Gutty Nyquist is coming out of his second. And then Stradivari followed by Cherry Wine. But Exaggerator has turned the table. He has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, HRRN Nation, and welcome to the very first Equine Forum show of 2017. Happy New Year, and happy to have you with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside my usual entry mate. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. And special guest co-host Jetta Vons, who has been with us for the past few weeks. She is now part of our ExpressBet radio team. You can catch her every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, and Christina McManigal, that's Jockey K-Mac, on ExpressBet Radio, 3 to 6 Eastern on SiriusXM and on our website. And also want to welcome everybody now tuning in to us on SiriusXM Channel 93, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. And, of course, everyone streaming us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. JT, good morning.
Good morning. Happy and delighted to be here.
Yeah. Eclipse Awards announced this past week. And the reason I jump right into that is because of the fact that we are going to be talking to some potential Eclipse Award winners over the course of the next couple of hours. Also going to talk to somebody who has already won an Eclipse Award, and that is writer Natalie Voss, who wrote a piece on jockeys and concussions for the Pollock Report last December.
Yeah, Natalie, great girl and a terrific piece she wrote.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And there we go. Looks like my microphone was having a couple of issues, but I'm back. Everybody's probably delighted that they couldn't hear me, by the way.
You never went away in my headset, but I don't know.
Yeah, they were probably extremely happy that they couldn't hear me.
Yeah.
Jetta Vons, what's up? Happy New Year.
Hey, good morning.
Nope. No Jetta Bonds? All right, we'll get back with Jetta here in just a couple of minutes. All right, so Pontiff, so the Eclipse Awards coming out. The nominations announced this past week at Gulfstream Park. And I mentioned that we're going to talk to a couple potential winners. We're going to talk to jockey Jose Ortiz, who is up for leading jockey. He won more races in 2016 than any other jockey. We're going to talk to him coming up right around 08:37 Eastern time. And then we'll be joined at 9 o'clock Eastern time by young jockey Lane Luzzi, the son of journeyman jockey Mike Luzzi. Lane is up for the apprentice jockey title, and looking forward to visiting with both those individuals here today and hearing both of their stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Jose just had a spectacular year. Started out this year with a new baby. So
yeah, how cool is that?
Yeah, very cool. So good luck to him with fatherhood, and hopefully he has as good a streak this year as he had last year.
What a year for Jose. Not only the new baby on its way. Of course, he got married back in December, just less than a month ago. And he got married to jockey Taylor Rice. So they are now expecting. And he also picks up his first win in a Breeders' Cup race in 2016. And then, as I mentioned, he wins more races than any other jockey. So here he is with Javier Castellano and Hall of Famer Mike Smith. And then there's Jose Ortiz trying to pull off that Eclipse Award title. It would be a first Eclipse if he can do it.
Yeah, well, I think he deserves it. He just had a spectacular year. He won so many races and did so many cool things, and I really think he deserves to win.
Yeah, I would agree. He was, believe it or not, I actually got all three of those jockeys correct in my voting. I selected all three of them as finalists, and I think all three are deserving. People will say, okay, well, Mike Smith didn't win that many races in 2016, but guess what? He won 10 grade one races. So
yeah,
you do that, you deserve some consideration for an Eclipse Award.
He only won like 56 races or something total.
55.
50. Oh, 55. Okay. Yeah. But who's counting?
Right. 55.
So, yeah. And but he won all the important ones. So anyway, he's another one that you could make a case for him. I, like you, had all three of those on my ballot.
Yeah. I guess maybe the one jockey that if you were going to say, okay, there should have been a fourth or somebody got snubbed, as we hear quite often in these types of things. Jose's brother, Irad Ortiz Jr., had another tremendous year. 313 victories in 2016, had $23 million plus in purse earnings. He was one that, and believe it or not, I went back and forth with Irad and with Mike Smith on my ballot, and I said, I have to give it to Mike just because of those 10 grade one wins and what he was able to accomplish in just 55 victories.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't think there's a comparison there myself, but, you know, everybody has their own ideas. I thought there were a few snubs.
Did you?
I did.
What did you think was maybe the biggest snub?
Well,
or one of the ones that jumped out at you?
Well, I think in the breeder category, I think Machmer Hall really should have been.
They had a great year.
They had a great year. I mean, it was awesome, and it's not, they're not a big farm. I mean, you know, and they probably wouldn't have won. Windstar Farm had a magnificent year, but I thought for a smaller operation, Machmer Hall should have been in there. I was a little surprised that Dreyfong didn't get any respect in the three-year-old male category. I thought that was odd. But to me, probably the biggest snub of the whole thing was Oscar Performance in the two-year-old male. He won the Breeders' Cup. He was outstanding. I think arguably he's either the best or second best two-year-old in the country, and he's out of the running. So, you know, that's my opinion.
Well, I also had him as one of my top three candidates in that two-year-old male. I had Classic Empire, who he did make it, of course. I had Mastery, believe it or not, he didn't make it either, and I had Oscar Performance. The three finalists in the two-year-old male are Classic Empire, Not This Time, and Practical Joke. And, yeah, I agree with you. I thought Oscar Performance deserves some consideration in that category. But, again, you're always, when you're selecting just the top three, you're always going to have somebody on the outside looking in. And if you selected the top five, we'd be having the same argument over who was number six or who was number seven. Yeah, talking about Dreyfong in the three-year-old male, I also included Dreyfong, JT. I thought Arrowgate, of course, was going to be a cinch in that category. I had Dreyfong. And believe it or not, I actually had Connect in there as my third one, and he didn't get any consideration either. It was Arrowgate, Exaggerator, and Nyquist. And Nyquist, I mean, winning the Kentucky Derby, that's gonna weigh heavily on a lot of people's ballots.
Yeah, well, that is the ultimate three-year-old race. And, you know, he had a good year, Nyquist. He kind of tailed off there at the end. But I think you have to look at the whole year when you're going over your ballot. You know,
I agree.
I put Terrace on top for female sprinter. She had an injury shortened campaign, but she was brilliant when she ran.
Yep.
She was, and I didn't really think there were any tremendous horses that stood out.
You and I were nowhere near each other. We didn't fill out the ballot at the same time. We did it completely separately. I also had Terrace as my number one candidate in that female sprint category. I agree with you. I think you're talking about the entire body of work in the 2016 campaign,
right?
Not just what have you done for me lately,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and that's the argument that people are going to use, you know, for California Chrome over Arrowgate. Even though Arrowgate beat California Chrome in their only meeting, they're going to say, well, you know, he had a larger body of work or whatever. Which is a valid argument. I mean, you can't really. I mean, it's just an opinion poll anyway. So it's just somebody's opinion, and just because I don't agree with them or you don't agree with them, it doesn't mean that they're wrong. It's just a difference of opinion.
All right. Well, Horse of the Year is the other category that is going to be talked about heavily, because you have three-year-old Arrowgate. You have California Chrome, who, the world's richest thoroughbred, was so brilliant throughout much of the year until Arrowgate beat him in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And then you have that outstanding three-year-old filly by the name of Songbird. Those are your three finalists: Arrowgate, California Chrome, Songbird for Horse of the Year. Here's our poll question this morning. You can weigh in at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. We want to know, of those three horses, Arrowgate, California Chrome, Songbird, who gets your vote for Horse of the Year? That's a good one. Who gets your vote? Is it Arrowgate, California Chrome, or Songbird? Weigh in throughout the morning. We'll update the poll as we move throughout the show. Natalie Voss won an Eclipse Award in writing for a piece that she did on the Pollock Report in December of 2015, focusing on jockey concussions. She's going to join us right after our first commercial break here in about 5 minutes from right now. We'll talk to Natalie about that piece and what she learned about what racing's doing to help riders, if anything, to help riders who are suffering from concussions and to prevent these things from happening on the racetrack. Jockey Jose Ortiz with us at 8:37, at 9 o'clock Eastern is Jockey Lane Luzzi, and then at 9:25 Eastern time, a special new segment will bring your way over the next several months through the breeding season. It's a Stallion Spotlight segment. Mark Toothaker will be with us from Spendthrift to focus on the Spendthrift Stallions. That's at 9:25 Eastern time. We'll get to all of that when we come back on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Adina Stallion Ghost Sapper, the sire of seven graded stakes winners in 2016, including grade one winners Shaman Ghost and Green Zapper, plus the exciting undefeated two-year-old McCracken.
But McCracken is bearing down on the outside. Here's McCracken in wild shot with a 16th to go, and McCracken grabs the lead 100 yards out, and he does it again. McCracken wins the Kentucky Jockey Club from off the pace by a length.
McCracken stamped himself a major Kentucky Derby contender with another impressive victory at Churchill Downs. Ghost Sapper has produced nine grade one winners, six millionaires, and three champions, so it's easy to see why his yearlings have been so well received in 2016, selling for up to $825,000. Ghost Sapper was the number four Keeneland September Book One sire, with yearlings averaging $417,000. Ghost Sapper, standing at Adina Springs. Learn more by visiting adinastallions.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what would be a common misunderstanding between an insured and the insurance company?
Mike, one issue is a policy condition that requires notification when an insured animal becomes sick or injured.
Do you mean in life-threatening situations?
Not just then, but if a veterinarian is called in for treatment other than routine care. Take, for example, if a yearling colt gets his foreleg caught in a fence and tears the skin. The colt is stitched up and everything seems fine, but later the colt develops a systemic infection. Then there is a serious situation that the company knows nothing about.
So the company needs to know, even if it's not a life-threatening situation.
That's right. It's a policy condition. The company has a stake in the health of the animal because of the existing insurance policy. The company might want to have its own vet examine the horse. In most cases, though, just a call or email is all that is needed.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
They're coming down for the finish. It's Catapult with the lead. Strike Midnight challenged but could not surpass Catapult, who wins the Gio Ponte Stakes.
Catapult's determined victory in the Gio Ponte Stakes at Aqueduct made the $350,000 yearling purchase the newest stakes winner for leading sire Kitten's Joy. With over $10 million in progeny earnings, Kitten's Joy is the leading turf sire in America for the fourth year in a row and currently ranks number five on the general sire list. Kitten's Joy, world-class at Ramsey Farm.
New to Cool More America for 2017, Air Force Blue. A force to be reckoned with. A champion two-year-old by Warfront.
And Air Force Blue now comes bounding through. Two, three lengths clear. A really good horse.
A three-time Group 1 winner. Armed with a devastating turn of foot. He's ready to take flight as a sire. It's time to get on board. Cool More America, home of champions.
Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interest and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch, and here she comes. Songbird's got a four-length lead as they come into the final furlong. Mike Smith just shakes the reins at Songbird. Going for Broke has made progress up into second inside a Family Tree, but they're 6 lengths behind Songbird at the 16th pole. It is Songbird, this magnificent filly, winning the Alabama. She is a perfect 10. Songbird with the greatest of ease today over Going for Broke, Family Tree, and Weak No More. Her final time was 2 minutes and 3 seconds flat.
Larry Colmus with the call. That was the Alabama Stakes at Saratoga this past summer, and Songbird, an easy winner of that race. She was in so many of her races in 2016, and because of that, Songbird is one of the candidates for Horse of the Year, along with Arrowgate and California Chrome. Our poll question at HRRN on Twitter is, who gets your vote? Is it Arrowgate, California Chrome, or is it three-year-old filly Songbird? We want to hear from you, so make sure you weigh in on that poll, and we'll update the results as we move throughout the program here this morning. Well, I mentioned that Natalie Voss won an Eclipse Award for a piece that she wrote that appeared on Pollock Report, and that was in December of 2015. And the piece took an in-depth look at concussions with riders and some of the concerns facing the racing industry along those same lines, and Natalie joins us now. And there's a saying that says a rolling stone gathers no moss, and I think that's very true with Natalie Voss. She is joining us from Australia. Natalie, what's up? Good morning, good evening, whatever it is over there in Australia.
We lost her.
Oh, okay, I think we lost the connection. We'll try to get Natalie back on the line for us here again. She's in Australia for the Magic Millions sale. I reached out to her yesterday. Didn't hear back, so I reached out to Ray Pollock, and I said, hey, do you have a way I can get in touch with Natalie? He says, well, she's on a plane on her way to Australia right now. She doesn't stop. This girl is a worker.
Yeah, she's always been like that ever since I've known her. Yes, a rolling stone gathers no Voss.
Jetta Vons is with us. We tried to bring her in the first half of the program, but Jetta, look, I mean, you're a rider.
You know
the issues that face riders with concussions.
Absolutely. It's the first thing we worry about when we come off. Did I hit my head?
Yeah. Natalie is with us now from Australia. Natalie, what's up down under?
Not too much. How are you guys?
Doing great. Good. Thanks for being here. Congratulations on that Eclipse Award. Well done.
Oh, thank you. I still honestly can't believe it.
Yeah, really spectacular. And, you know, the reason I was so adamant about bringing you on the program here today is because, as you know, the PDJF is our official charity here on the network. We do an awful lot to give back to disabled riders. And the concussion issue is something that I've been preaching about on this show for a very, very long time. What did you learn when you were putting together this piece and some of the things that maybe racing is doing or not doing to help riders with this concussion issue?
I think the thing that probably surprised me the most when I was doing the research here is that there really isn't kind of a uniform protocol for determining whether it's safe for a rider to get back on the horse or get back on the horse for the next race and continue riding. Because, of course, we know if they suffer another head injury too soon, that can have really serious consequences. And I guess I kind of assumed that since there are medical personnel on the track, that every single track had some kind of pretty good protocol for communicating with those people and making like an official decision. But it sounds like with so many things in racing, it sort of varies a lot depending on where you are.
Yeah, well, racing's always been at the forefront of you know, jockeys' health with track physicians and that type of thing, but not everybody's trained up to you know, the level that they probably should be. And I would think there could be a situation where they could set up some kind of training for track physicians to know exactly what to do and what to look for. You know, as you go from track to track, I mean, certainly at the big tracks, they have, you know, a lot more staff and probably, you know, some knowledgeable doctors. But even at smaller tracks, the doctors, you know, are excellent and do the best they can with the equipment and facilities that they have to work with. But I think it's a vital thing that racing really has to embrace, and track management's everywhere. It should be part of a safety protocol as well. When these tracks are accredited for safety, it shouldn't just be the racing surface. It should be, you know, the riders as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems so basic to me. And I think part of what's kind of concerning at some of the smaller racetracks where the medical people who are there are doing their very best is that they're still sort of leaving it up to the rider to tell them in some cases, oh, do you think you can get back on, or do you think you're okay? And the jockey might feel like he kind of has to get back on the next horse, or he might be a little bit too kind of disoriented to really answer those questions in a way that he, you know, he should be in order to demonstrate that he's all there. So that's why I think that the tests that like the one that I mentioned in that article, and there's another one since, a test that you can have somebody do like on an iPad screen to sort of test cognition compared to that person's previous performances on the same test, to kind of get an idea of what's really going on beyond just what they're telling me, because what they're telling me might be a little bit off depending on how hard they hit their head possibly.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head right there, Natalie. I think it speaks to the bigger issue and the more important issue with thoroughbred racing in the NFL, for example. And I know you referenced the movie Concussion in your piece several times. In the NFL, you do have a concussion protocol. If a player comes up with a head injury, they are immediately, during the game, put into a concussion protocol. They are not allowed to play again until they come out of that protocol. Horse racing does not have those same set of procedures in place at the racetrack. So if a jockey does indeed get hurt, come up with an injury during a spill, yeah, the medical examiner can look at them, but they have no authority to really put them into a concussion protocol. And jockeys are going to want to ride. They get paid per mount. They want to get out there and get the purse money. They're going to want to get back out there if at all possible. You talked to Terry Meeks, who is with the Jockeys Guild. You also talked to a rider who had undergone some serious brain trauma throughout her riding career. Tell me about those conversations when you put this piece together.
Yeah, well, I think my conversation with Gwen Jockson, the retired jockey, was probably one of the more impactful interviews that I've done, just on myself, like listening to her speak. She's dealing with just a set of symptoms that sort of seem to just sort of feed off of each other. Her doctors believe as a result of chronic trauma to her brain and to her spinal cord. And it's sort of gotten to the point where, you know, she has the loss of hearing, she has the disorientation, she has memory problems, but along with those things comes balance issues, which means she falls more often, which means she ends up aggravating these things. So she's in a really frustrating sort of situation, but I was struck by just how generally positive she was, and just really how relieved she was that this new awareness of chronic head trauma had sort of resulted in a diagnosis that made sense to her. She had been waiting for so long to find out, or hoping that somebody would be able to tell her what was really going on and give her a medical diagnosis. And mostly she was just, you know, emphasizing to me, I'm just glad I know what's happening now, even though I'm not really sure what I'm going to be able to do with it.
Well, I mean, the title of your article is "Why Does My Head Hurt?" And sometimes somebody will tell a rider, "Oh, well, it's all in your head. Just get back on a horse and you'll be fine." And it really is all in your head, but it's not your imagining, and it's actually happening.
Yeah, and you know, she spoke of like some of the emotional things that she was experiencing in connection with a lot of these symptoms as well, where, you know, she'd lose control, she'd get very upset if she was, you know, around too many people, when she'd be out shopping or something. She just sort of felt like her mood swings were getting more and more extreme. And so I think that that's probably part of why it was hard to really put a finger on a physical cause, because you look at emotional issues and you think that you think of a lot of things before you think of some trauma that happened 16 years ago in her case.
Talking with Eclipse Award winner Natalie Voss here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Natalie, that has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's still a little strange sounding, but it has a nice ring.
Yeah, you'll get used to it over time. Trust me, it won't get old. Natalie Voss with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Natalie, when Terry Meeks from the Jockeys Guild talked to you, he told this story, and I've heard this story multiple times from several riders, about riders that will sustain a concussion, don't know that they have this type of injury. They get back out there and ride. They ride the next race, don't even remember riding. And I've heard stories of riders who go out and ride the rest of the program and don't remember riding the rest of the program. Extremely dangerous.
Yeah, that was probably one of the more disturbing things that he said to me in that interview as well, that really stood out to me, obviously. So it's why I included it in the piece. But he didn't single out one person. You know, he said, I've heard of this happening more than once. And that's sort of why I think, you know, maybe it's an issue for the jockey of, I feel like I can't say that anything's wrong with me because I have to be able to do my job. But it also might be like an education issue to an extent. I'm not sure how aware all riders are. I mean, I know a lot of riders are very aware that head trauma is not good, but I'm not sure how many people really are very familiar with the symptoms of a concussion to recognize in themselves that something isn't quite right. So, yeah, I think that's why self-reporting isn't necessary. Self-policing on the part of the jockey in this sort of situation probably isn't sufficient.
Well, in the NFL, the officials are allowed to take somebody off the field if they think they're not performing to their level or think they have something wrong with them, which I think is a great idea. And, you know, it should be up to, you know, the clerk of scales possibly, or somebody that's in the jocks room to observe these riders and see how they're doing. And maybe, you know, if they do go out and ride the next race and then they come back and check with them again, not just go on with the day and, you know, play racehorse rummy. So it's something that, there really does need to be some kind of protocol.
Yep.
But I think it should be up to the jockeys, too, to educate their brethren and to pay attention to one another.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Because it's probably, I mean, those guys know each other so well, it's probably, you know, pretty easy for them to recognize when one of their colleagues is not quite acting like themselves. I will say that it sounds as though there's a movement to have sports medicine trained physicians on hand for spills that happen during racing in Kentucky, I believe, in this year. They're beginning that program, I understood from the Jockeys Guild Assembly. And Maryland does currently have a sports medicine jockey, sports medicine doctor, who is on site for, I believe, some of their meets, if not all of them, to kind of do that coordination with the clerk of scales and the officials about when somebody should come back. So there are a couple of programs now that are starting to kind of watch the NFL model, and it seems like to the extent they can are trying to implement that here. So there are a couple of areas we can look at and be hopeful, but it's, I feel like maybe not something we're doing as well with as we could.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Natalie Voss here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Natalie, what time is it in Australia right now?
It is around 11:15 at night, I believe.
11:15.
It's a little hard for me to tell anymore.
All right, so you're going to hop on a plane. You're going to fly back from Australia. You're basically going to go right to Gulfstream Park for the Eclipse Awards. Is that right?
I think I have about 3 days in between, but I assume I will spend most of those jet lagged. So it'll seem like I'm going right back to a plane and headed to Miami, yes.
And that's a long trip down to Australia. You basically lose a day in the air. When I went down to Australia, I left on the 5th, and I arrived on the 7th with no memory of the 6th, and I didn't even fall off a horse. But when I was in Australia, I did. I incurred a very, very serious injury while I was galloping down there. I lost control of a horse in a pasture, and we side passed a tree, and it broke my femur in half, and I had to jump off the horse.
Ooh.
Well, Natalie, we have to get to a commercial break here, but we want to thank you for taking the time from Australia. I'm very jealous that you are there. It is on my bucket list. I want to go to Australia someday. Would love to take in the Melbourne Cup or one of those big races. But we appreciate it. Congrats again on that Eclipse Award, and we'll look forward to seeing you when you get back here. Safe travels.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, Natalie Voss here on HRRN. And again, you can check out that article if you Google it. It's on Pollock Report, and go back and read that piece that Natalie did with the jockey's concussions. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. Then we come back and we're going to visit with jockey Jose Ortiz. Don't miss that one. Coming up next on the Equine Forum.
This lady had a wealth of character, a marvelous, vibrant personality, and she was indeed an inspiration to others. She was a lady through and through. And in the roaring 1920s, while still in her 20s, she entered the world of racing as the owner of a steeplechaser. A racing stable, Brookmead, came into existence a few years later. She was adverse to pomposity and took great delight in needling and openly deflating an obvious inflated ego. Her infectious sense of humor provided her the tool for doing so, especially evident in times of stress. Perhaps equally as synonymous with Brookmead Stable and its success were the names of Preston and Elliot Birch, who trained her horses. Preston began training for Our Lady of the Moment in 1944, and on October 21st of that year, he saddled her Dear Me for her in the Maryland Handicap at Laurel. Dear Me whipped the redoubtable Twilight Tear by 7 lengths in that affair, and that was Birch's first of a long, long list of stakes winners he saddled for Brookmead. Birch was very patient with young horses, and he and our subject probably received more thrills from a horse named Sailor than any other racing in her colors. That was in the decade of the 50s, while others racing in her colors included Sword Dancer, Bowl of Flowers, and Oligarchy. Her superb Flower Bowl won the Delaware Handicap in 1956, and on May 2, 1959, Sword Dancer won the Derby for her, while on the very same day, Big Effort won the Bed of Roses at the old Jamaica racetrack on Long Island. In 1934, Our Lady of the Day, as it were, became the very first woman in American turf history to lead the winning owners list. Her Bowl of Flowers was voted Philly Champion of 1960 and 61, and Sword Dancer was voted Horse of the Year in 1959. This marvelous lady dearly loved the thoroughbreds, and among the many greats carrying her silks to the winner's circle, she considered her best to have been Cavalcade, Sailor, Sword Dancer, and Bowl of Flowers. But she had a very soft spot for others, including Okapi, Sunglow, and High Quest. In 1934, and 16 years later in 1950, Brookmead was the leading money-winning stable in America. From 1925 until her demise in 1962, her horses won 1,144 races. As previously indicated, her trademark was her love for and the ability to jest with her trainers, the Birches. Before big races, she would often break the tension in the paddock by saying, for example, quote, "Do you think I should put on the blinkers today?" Or, quote, "Now you haven't put that saddle on right." When her jockey would appear, she could be heard to say, quote, "Now, Preston, you step back. I'm going to give the order on how to ride this horse today," with a twinkle in her eye, of course. And she would go on very solemnly to say, quote, "You just go on out and win this race today." If it was muddy, she would be quite apt to say, "Now, don't you dare get my colors dirty today." Yes, this grand lady, and that she was in every sense of the word through and through, held to the sporting ideals with the best characterized racing to its very best, both in victory and defeat. The mistress of Brookmead Stable and the subject of this piece, Isabel Dodge Sloan.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus Store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus Store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus Store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus Store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus
experience.
What is it about Tony's steaks and seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
Pin Oak Stud, home to Broken Vow, sire of 2016 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and Eclipse finalist Champagne Room, as well as other Grade 1 winners like Cotton Blossom, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, and Sassy Image. Also home to millionaire and multiple graded stakes winner Alternation by Distorted Humor, a six-time stakes winner, including the Peter Pan, Pimlico Special, and Oaklawn Handicap. Alternation was represented by his first yearlings, which sold last year for up to $160,000, over 20 times his stud fee. Broken Vow and Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Power. Anchor Down has taken the lead once again, leaving Myositis Dan behind.
Passion.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish.
Performance.
Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Gainsway is proud to announce the newest addition to their stallion roster for the 2017 breeding season, Anchor Down. A son of Gainsway's perennial leading sire, Tappet, Anchor Down is a multiple graded stakes winner at Belmont Park who defeated Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Tamar Coase in the Grade 2 Kelso with a near track record time of 132.90 while earning a buyer speed figure of 108, the second highest dirt figure of 2016 at the distance. Out of a graded stakes winning 2-year-old, Anchor Down is a half brother to Grade 1 winning sprinter Sweet Lulu, who sold for $3 million as a broodmare, and a full brother to Grade 1 juvenile performer Iron Fist. Anchor Down, standing at Gainsway.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Good Samaritan obliged to travel very deep past the quarter pole with six or seven lengths to pick up. Oscar Performance, the new leader at the 3/16 pole, getting the head and now the body in front from the early leader, well-abled. Then Lancaster Bomber and Good Samaritan running home well, but Oscar Performance is well clear. In second spot, Lancaster Bomber, and then Good Samaritan, but Oscar Performance has won it by a length and a half. Lancaster Bomber second, ahead in front of Good Samaritan, and Ticonderoga finishing furiously into the superfecta.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jetta Vaughns together in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Michael Rona had the call of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf and Oscar Performance getting the victory that day. Oscar Performance was ridden by jockey Jose Ortiz, and it kind of was, well, it was symbolic of everything that Jose achieved in 2016 and what was definitely a magical year for the young rider. He won 351 races last year. That is more than any other jockey in the country. His purse earnings for 2016 were well in excess of $22,000, just shy of $23 million in purse earnings. And not only that, Jose had the pleasure of marrying Taylor Rice at the end of the year in December, and now they are expecting their first child. And Jose is with us now here on the Equine Forum. Jose, first of all, congratulations, my friend. What a year.
Thank you. Morning. How are you?
Doing great, my friend, and thanks for taking the time. How do you sum up 2016 when you look back on the year?
It was a great year in in the business and in my personal life also.
You and I have talked on several occasions, Jose. What's the key to having this kind of success as a jockey at the highest levels in thoroughbred racing?
I mean, you got to stay focused and keep working. I got to keep working and go every day out there and do my best. That's all I do.
You had a fantastic Saratoga. You bought lots of dinners for me during the meet, by the way. you really seem to excel in turf racing. Do you enjoy riding the grass more than the dirt?
I really like the grass, but I think I improve a lot because when I start in the beginning, I didn't ride the grass very well, so I tried to do better and better on the grass, and now I get to the point that I can tell that I did it. Like, I get better.
What's the secret to riding well on the grass?
Be patient. You gotta be patient on safe ground.
There you go.
Yeah, Jose does that as good as anybody. Jose, you talked with me with your brother on our Jock Talk show a couple of years ago at Saratoga, and it was really an enjoyable visit. People can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and listen to that entire show. But one thing that you mentioned is that you grew up in Puerto Rico idolizing guys like Hall of Famer Johnny Velasquez and Angel Cordero Jr., and now here you are nominated for an Eclipse Award. Johnny had a good year, but he's not nominated. And you look over, and there's Javier Castellano, and there's Hall of Famer Mike Smith. What does this mean to Jose Ortiz to get this nomination?
It means a lot. It's like a dream come true. Just being nominated is a big goal for me. If I win it, it's great. But, you know, Javier have a great year. Also, Mike did. Guys that are not nominated had a great year, like Ired, Florent Giroux, Johnny V. They have a tremendous year, but, you know, it's very competitive right now, and they also have a great year, but I think it's going to be a fun day to wait for the results.
You know, you're right about Ired. We talked about this earlier in the show. Ired had a great year last year, 313 wins, $23 million plus in purse earnings. That was actually more money earned than what you earned in 2016. Did Ired maybe get snubbed in the nominations here? Should he have been among the top three?
Well, I don't know. I think so. I think the same way. I think he should be. But, you know, Mike, he just won 51 races and he won 10 Grade Ones. So I don't know. He rode two of the best horses this year, like Somber and Arrogate. So, but I don't know. Everybody did great. Mike just rode less races than days we have in 1 year. You know, he rode less than 365 races and he made 30 million and won 10 Grade Ones. So that's great too.
Maybe you can start taking a page from his playbook. That sounds like a pretty good way to make a living.
Yeah. I mean, but he had earned it. You know, he's, I don't know exactly how old is he, but he should be over 50. And he keep himself in shape, and I mean he know how to do it. He got the experience.
Yeah, that's a good example for a young guy like you, huh? That if you take care of yourself and you get a little lucky, you can have a very long career.
Yeah, that's a very good example, but you know. Jose, I'd rather be like Johnny. Johnny, that's my example.
How come?
Because he's the best for me, and I don't think he's going to ride that long.
Yeah, Johnny Velasquez is somebody I mentioned. You grew up idolizing him, but now you get to compete with him day in and day out, and you get to be in the jocks room with him every single day. Tell me about that relationship that you now have with your idol, John Velasquez.
It's great. I mean, Johnny, I grew up, like you say, idolizing him. He was, it's for me, the best jockey out there right now, and always been. But he also is great out the racetrack. He's a great person, and I just want to be like him in the track and outside the track too. And our relationship is great. I mean, I feel like we talk like brothers, and it's great. I mean, he's a very good guy, and I respect him a lot.
Jose, who were some of the other people that helped you get to this point in your career outside of Johnny Velasquez?
My brother and a lot of people in Puerto Rico, a lot of people like people working the jockey school that helped me to be where I am today. But my brother helped me a lot.
So how do you come back and top this year in 2017? What do you do for an encore?
I work. I want to be where I am today. So I work. I didn't stop working until I am here. But now that I'm in good position, I want to keep working. Next year I want to be in the same position. And the next year, too. And the next year, too.
Well, you get that first Breeders' Cup win this year with Oscar Performance. I know that was very special. What other goals are left for you to accomplish here moving forward this year and into the future?
Well, I want to, of course, win the Eclipse Award this year that I got nominee. The Kentucky Derby. I mean, one of those races of the Triple Crown.
How about staying out of Taylor's doghouse? Does that rate highly for you, too?
What?
That's exactly right. Jose Ortiz.
He's still on his honeymoon.
That's
Don't
right.
give him a hard time.
Happy wife, happy life.
That's right.
That's exactly right. And by the way, Jose, I mentioned you guys are expecting. Congratulations. And if I understand correctly, a little girl?
Yeah, I'm very happy, very excited.
Have you started thinking about names yet?
No. Not yet.
Will she be a jockey?
I don't think so.
Well, Jose, we appreciate it, my friend. Thank you for visiting with us here today. Again, congratulations on all your success. You're a class act. Keep working hard. I know you will, and we'll look forward to bigger and better things from Jose up the road.
Thank you.
All right, Jose Ortiz with us here on HRRN. What? Outstanding response.
Yeah. I can't believe you even asked that question.
Well, you know, hey, I mean, he's married now, right? I mean,
yeah, welcome to the brotherhood, right?
Jetta hit the nail on the head.
Yes.
Happy wife, happy life. So
Jetta knows about this.
There you go.
Jetta does know about this. That's why Jetta's divorced.
Yeah, I loved his. When I asked him about, you know, what's next, what other goals, and he said, I want to be in this position every year. And then talking about wanting to be John Velasquez, both on the track and off the track, and he's 100% right on that. You will not find somebody better than John Velasquez off the field, off the track, so to speak. He is just a first-class act all around, great family guy. And somebody who really spends a lot of time giving back to young riders. And I know that Jose really appreciates that.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no finer person on the racetrack than John Velasquez. And you can ask almost anybody, and they'll tell you the same thing. So it's really a strong riding colony right now on the East Coast. And these younger guys, they do have some really good examples to follow. you know, Johnny and Mike Smith and, you know, even Javier is one of the older guys now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, when you have riders like that and you have to compete against them and you see the success that they have and how they conduct themselves, it really rubs off on these younger guys. And it's good. You see them out there at Saratoga every morning working horses.
Every morning.
Well, it sets a good example. They're setting a great example for young riders, and obviously Jose is following.
Yeah,
in that
he's
example.
Out there this morning. He had to coordinate that interview around his work schedule with all of his horses this morning. I mean, they're tireless workers. If you think that these riders just show up and start winning big races and have this kind of success, forget about it. I mean, they're having this success because they outwork everybody else.
Well, look what he said about riding on the grass. I wasn't very good. So I decided I needed to get better.
Yeah.
And the way you get better is watching and you know, paying attention to what you need to do. And he says patience and saving ground. Well, you know, right there, I love the guy on the grass anyway. But, I mean, this is why he's good. Because you see other riders, you know, moving too soon and going wide. And that is a sure way to lose a turf race.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I always feel like if you can ride the grass well, you can ride anything. And he's phenomenal. He really is.
He won the jockey title at Saratoga. He was Naira's leading rider in 2016. And now he is up for an Eclipse Award along with Javier Castellano and Hall of Famer Mike Smith. And, of course, we'll find out later this month if Jose's name is called on that Eclipse Award evening at Gulfstream Park. We're going to get to a break. We'll come back and get you set for a busy second half of the show. We'll tell you all about it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home of the 2017 Pegasus World Cup.
Pin Oak Stud, home to Broken Vow, sire of 2016 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and Eclipse finalist Champagne Room, as well as other Grade 1 winners like Cotton Blossom, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, and Sassy Image. Also home to Millionaire and multiple graded stakes winner Alternation by Distorted Humor. A six-time stakes winner, including the Peter Pan, Pimlico Special, and Oaklawn Handicap. Alternation was represented by his first yearlings, which sold last year for up to $160,000, over 20 times his stud fee. Broken Vow and Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Upstart, the best 2 and 3-year-old son of leading sire Flatter.
But Upstart is pulling away, and he is pulling away impressively to win the Holy Bowl.
Upstart became the East Coast leading Kentucky Derby contender after demolishing a star-studded field in the Grade 2 Holy Bowl and retired a multiple graded stakes winner and 6 times Grade 1 placed with earnings of more than $1.7 million. Airdrie Stud's Upstart. Think about it. This afternoon, the spotlight once again shines on Kentucky Derby hopefuls at Gulfstream Park with 5 stakes races, including a trio of grade threes, the Hutchinson, the Old Hat, and the Dania Beach. Plus, if you're a contest player, don't miss Gulfstream's NHC qualifier on January 15th in Ten Palms. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com or contact Nancy Berry at 954-457-6284. Gulfstream Park, welcome to your playground.
Eclipse Award-winning champion Blaine retired to stud with over $4.3 million in earnings, including a historic victory over Zenyatta in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Now Blaine is the leading sire of his crop by graded stakes horses and ranked number one in the sales ring, with yearlings bringing up to $600,000. Top runners this year include track record setter Onus, grade one placed Going for Broke, stakes winners Sweet Victory and Exaggerated, and three-time stakes victress Queen Caroline. Blaine at Claiborne Farm.
Hey everyone, Mike Penna here. If you're in Kentucky and you love wine, you need to experience Lover's Leap Vineyards and Winery in Lawrenceburg. Just a short drive from Lexington, Lover's Leap is one of the oldest and largest vineyards in Kentucky. Stop in for an educational wine tasting or do what I love most. Simply kick back and relax on their wraparound porch while enjoying the view with a glass of their exceptional wine. And I can tell you, their wines are the perfect fit for all of your farm and company parties. So stop by for a visit today. It's Lover's Leap Winery in Lawrenceburg.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They run to the top of the stretch. Diamond Bachelor and Lane Luzzi trying to do it every step. Air Bueno to the attack for Rispoli. From the back and Enterprising while five wide. Into the stretch after three quarters in 112 flat. The leader still Diamond Bachelor. Air Bueno to the attack is second. Lochte coming up the inside with a run. And down the center it's Enterprising. But through it all, Diamond Bachelor has the lead. Diamond Bachelor gate to wire. Enterprising second from Air Bueno third. Then Lochte in Dreaming of Gold in 141. And four.
Diamond Bachelor getting the victory in the Vid Stakes down in Florida. Diamond Bachelor ridden by young apprentice jockey Lane Luzzi, who's going to join us coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Lane is one of the nominees for an Eclipse Award for the apprentice jockey title, and looking forward to that visit coming up in just a few minutes. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Jetta Vaughns in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. We threw out the poll question today at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. So far, the votes coming in heavily in favor of California Chrome. The poll question, and you can weigh in right now, who gets your vote for Horse of the Year? There are three finalists, Arrowgate, California Chrome, and the three-year-old filly Songbird. As you would expect, it's Chrome and Arrowgate leading the way. Chrome with 63%, Arrowgate 29% of the vote at this point, and Songbird 8%. Are you guys as surprised as I am that the gap is that big between California Chrome and Arrowgate in the poll?
No, because California Chrome has a legion of Chromies, and they've been doing it for years.
Right.
He's much beloved.
Yeah.
But I would have thought that Arrowgate would have gotten a little bit more respect after having beaten him head-to-head.
I think Arrowgate is the horse player's horse of the year,
mm-hmm.
and California Chrome is the fan's horse of the year.
Well, and like Jude said earlier, it's a body of work over the course of the year, and Arrowgate, the strength of his performance for this year was on his last two races, the Travers and the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, but they were pretty good.
They were pretty good.
if you had to hang your hat on a couple of performances, I think that performance in the Travers...
Not to take anything away, but... Still, it was a year of a body of work for California Chrome versus two races for Arrowgate.
Yeah, I have no problem divulging the information. I actually voted for California Chrome for Horse of the Year. I made Arrowgate second, and I made Songbird third, just the way it is in the poll right now. But it wasn't that easy of a decision. I really went back and forth on this one because I could make a strong case for Arrowgate. And I think any other year, if you didn't have a horse like California Chrome out there, Arrowgate's a cinch to win Horse of the Year after what he did. Right? All right, let's say you took California Chrome out of this discussion, and it was Arrowgate and Songbird. Who's going to win it there?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
Because Songbird was pretty impressive.
But if you take California Chrome out of the equation, who knows if the Breeders' Cup Classic would have turned out the way it did? I mean, you're taking
Arrowgate would have won by 10.
Well, you're taking out his main competition.
I'm staying out of this.
Beating California Chrome is a main staple of why people are trying to say he's Horse of the Year. So with no California Chrome...
You beat the best horse
exactly.
in the world. That's my thing.
Exactly.
Arrowgate ran against
exactly.
the best horse in the world and beat him.
So
he won the Travers with a track record or a stakes record.
Sizzling time.
Yeah, Yeah, you see a sub 2 minute.
He set that track on fire that day.
It was interesting because in his call, Larry Colmus with Songbird, I can't remember what race it was, but 2 minutes and 3 seconds. And what flashed in my mind was that 159 and change on the board after the Travers. And, you know, you just go, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Where did this race come from?
Well, and Songbird, quite frankly, probably could have gone even quicker. She was never truly asked. Mike never got to the bottom of her in those races in Saratoga. So
he didn't
need to. You can say the same thing about Arrogate, too, though, because Arrogate won for fun in the Travers and was really somewhat wrapped up, right? He wasn't being asked to run at the end. He could think about that. What if Arrogate was truly asked to lay it all on the line? Didn't have to because he was in front by so much. But think about what the final time would have been then.
Yeah, much faster.
Yeah,
he probably could have.
He probably would have shaded 159.
Yeah, he would have gone 58 and something. Yeah, which is
freakish.
Yeah, it's insane.
Especially at Saratoga.
So how about the rematch we're going to see with Chrome and Arrowgate January 28th in the Pegasus World Cup down at Gulfstream? Of course, you're going to hear that rematch exclusively on radio with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Coverage beginning January 28th at 4:30 Eastern Time. Make sure you're with us for that one. Really looking forward to that as we see that rematch. And we begin our Saturdays at Gulfstream series, bringing you live coverage of their stakes races every single Saturday during the championship meet.
Yeah, and our man Alan Sherman is popping off saying he's going to win big.
Yeah, he did. He sent out a text last week. He said he will not get beat. There you go. Let the smack talk begin. Arrowgate missed his prep last week because of the wet weather, right, out in California. So he didn't run in the stakes race he was supposed to go in. He's going to train up to the race. Advantage California Chrome because he's had a prep or no?
No.
Not for a horse like Arrowgate.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's an incredibly long layoff anyways. And
not for a trainer like Bob Baffert.
Exactly. Bob Baffert's going to keep
him
going.
I'm actually happy he didn't go to the prep myself.
Yeah. I think it might have taken something out of him.
Yeah.
All right. A lot of things we can continue to talk about. We'll do it in hour number two. Lane Luzzi is coming up in just a few minutes, and then we're going to visit with Mark Toothaker to talk about the Spendthrift Stallions right around 9:25 Eastern. That's all ahead right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Beholder and Songbird, a soul-stirring duel. Forever unbridled, two lengths back bird. Songbird and Beholder, Beholder and Songbird. A cliffhanger that could go either way.
Here comes Lonnie on the far outside, and Brigator is coming too. It is Destin in front. Brigator, Lonnie on the outside. Destin and Brigator, these two come down to the line.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
But California Chrome has gone into overdrive. He's two lengths in front. He's clear of Munda Hinge battling on. Then for sure wish, but it's California Chrome in front. It's Alchemy in Dubai. Chrome turns to gold.
Drake Bong on the inside and Masochistic still battling it out. AP Indian making no impression. Mind Your Biscuits is bubbling to the surface. Drake Bong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish. But Drake Bong's the leader. Drake Bong has won.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pope Jude, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and Jetta Vaughns. We are all together in our Lexington studios. A bit chilly here in Lexington, Kentucky, as it is all over the country, but we hope this program is warming you up here this morning. Over the course of the 2 hours here, we had a chance to talk in the first half of the program anyways with Natalie Voss, the Eclipse Award-winning writer for the Pollock Report, and Jose Ortiz, who is up for an Eclipse Award as the leading jockey. If you missed any portion of the show, you can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, listen to a podcast of this program and all of our shows. It's all there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Looking forward to the second half, too. Lane Luzzi going to join us momentarily, and Mark Toothaker from Spendthrift with our new Stallion Spotlight segment we're going to bring your way over the course of the next several months.
Yeah, well, Lane's in contention for an Eclipse Award, and Mark Toothaker's got a lot of fine stallions over there at Spendthrift Farm.
Yeah, and by the way, Spendthrift also in contention for an Eclipse Award as leading owner, along with Judmont Farms and our good friend Ken and Sarah Ramsey. So congratulations to B. Wayne Hughes and Spendthrift for all their success. Lane Luzzi has had an awful lot of success over the course of the past season. You look back on what he's done here in 2016. Well, all he did as an apprentice is win 88 races and really get things rolling in a year that was certainly special for him. Lane is with us now on the program. Lane, congratulations on that nomination.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate you guys having me on today.
Yeah, and of course, people know you, of course, not only as being an apprentice jockey, but you're the son of journeyman jockey Mike Luzzi. Talk about that. Talk about being the son of somebody who's had an awful lot of success in this game, and now here you are following in his footsteps. Has to be pretty special.
Yeah, you know, I've grown up around the sport my whole life. You know, just grew up in the jockey's room. You know, horse racing's always been my passion. It's always what I love to do, so... you know, when I was making the transition to becoming a jockey myself, it was a little bit easier than it would be for some other people, you know, because I know the routine. I know how to deal with the people. It just came a lot easier to me when I'm getting started.
Tell me about the moment when you found out that you were going to be nominated for an Eclipse Award.
You know, the Eclipse Award's been a goal of mine this entire year. You know, my dad won it back in 1989, so it's a big deal to me and my family. So when I found out the news, you know, I was obviously ecstatic about the nomination. But, you know, a lot of people say, you know, it's an honor just to be nominated. So win, lose, draw, you know, it's been a great year, and I have no regrets.
It is an honor to be nominated. And what event or events stood out for you during the year that feel like you feel like you have a good chance to win?
You know, I look at my competitors and I look at myself. You know, I won 3 stakes this year, and I think that's a big deal because I didn't have my weight allowance to win those. And, you know, that's a big compliment, you know, that these trainers have trusted me not only in these big races, but I show up in these big races, and I think that's a huge deal for a voter to look at. And, you know, I didn't just do it once. I did it 3 times. So, you know, it's been a great accomplishment.
Lane, you mentioned wanting to follow in your dad's footsteps. What was your dad's reaction to this past year, all the success that you had, and then this Eclipse nomination?
You know, he's been proud of me. You know, we talk on the phone every day, really after every race. You know, he's been my my role model, my teacher, my best friend the whole way around. And, you know, I know he's real proud of me, and I try to make him proud every time I go out there. So, you know, it's a learning experience. I learned a lot from him, and I think he's learned a little from me as well. You know, it's just it's how the game goes.
What have you been able to teach him?
You know, like, trust. You know, he sees me and he can see what I can do ability-wise, and, you know, he can tell me to do this and do that. And I listen to him, and I think that's a big deal for me and him, not only on the track but off the track as well.
Well, we know that your dad can ride. What kind of teacher is Mike Luzzi?
You know, it's funny because sometimes he's very hard on me, sometimes he's not, and, you know, it's... you know, if he thinks I do something wrong, he's going to let me know, and that's fine. You know, I want to be the best jockey I can be, so, you know, tough love it is. It's a tough game, but, you know, you take it in stride, and like I said, he's my greatest teacher, and I've learned so much from just watching him, let alone him telling me what I should and shouldn't do in a race.
How would you describe your dad's riding style, and how would you compare it to yours, Lane?
You know, with the 5 pounds that I get, I'm forced to be a little more aggressive sometimes. A lot of people like me to be, you know, a little bit closer to the pace or speed rider, if you want to, you know, use all those cliches. But my dad, what I like about him, I think he's a very patient rider. He gives every horse a chance to win the race. whether it's on the pace, off the pace, or in the back of the pack, I can do that. Train is what you, but sometimes, you know, people ride me, try to get those, try to put the horse on the front end, try to put him close to the pace. So he has a little bit more, obviously he's got more experience, so, you know, he could do more what he wants to out there. You know, I'm told to what to do, essentially.
You've developed a good relationship with trainer Patrick Biancone. He's kind of noted for finding good young riders. How's that working out for you?
You know, it's great. It's a great compliment. You know, you mentioned a few good riders, Lawrence Giroux, Julian Leparoux. You know, and it's really an honor that he takes the time to work with me. He's also taught me a lot, and you know, he's given me good opportunities. Those three stake wins were all for him. So, you know, it's a good relationship. He's a great guy, and we're doing well together this year.
Lane, what was the moment this year where you got off a horse and you finally thought to yourself, you know, man, I got this. I kind of getting comfortable. I know what I'm doing. What was that moment for you this year?
You know, it started pretty early, actually. I rode my fifth winner, and, you know, you get a sense of confidence, you know, like maybe I belong here. Maybe I can do this, even though you're still so green. But, you know, you got the ups and downs in the game, and as a bug boy, you know, sometimes you feel like you're on top of the world so quick, and, you know, next thing you know, you go down and you break your collarbone. So it's been a learning experience all year, but I'm very confident in myself, my confidence in my ability to ride horses and just, you know, win races.
Talking with jockey Lane Luzzi here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Lane up for that Apprentice Jockey Eclipse Award. He was nominated along with jockeys Kevin Gomez and Luis Ocasio. Lane, I mentioned Apprentice Jockey. A short time ago, we had a chance to visit with jockey Jose Ortiz, and he, of course, is up for the leading jockey title. But talk about some of the unique challenges that face apprentice jockeys when they first get started with their career.
You know, there's a lot of people that ride you because you're a bug boy, but you find there's more people that don't ride you because you're a bug boy. So, you know, it goes both ways, and you kind of have to, you know, cement your own, you know, ability in their head. You know, maybe he knows what he's doing, and the goal as a bug boy is really to become, you know, a journeyman with the 5-pound advantage once you win your 40 wins. So, you know, that's been a goal of mine all year, is to just be recognized as one of the other guys, not just with one star next to my name.
When does your bug run out?
February 1st.
All right, so what are the challenges when the bug runs out and you have to start riding at equal weights?
You know, all those people that were riding you because you had the weight, you know, you have to prove to them that, you know, the weight's not carrying their horses across the wire, you know, so there's always new bug boys coming into town that are going to attract those people. So it's really creating new business and keeping the business that you already have. If you can do that, you should be able to be successful. So me and my agent, we're working hard every day just to keep that business going. It's a tough meet down here in the summer, in the winter at Gulfstream. So like I said, we're just working hard trying to get on as many horses as possible.
Lane, Jose spent some time talking about growing up in Puerto Rico and idolizing John Velasquez, who, of course, he now gets to ride with day in and day out. How about for you, outside of your dad, who I know is going to be in that conversation, who are some of the other jockeys that you looked up to when you were growing up?
Oh, geez, so many. Javier Castellano, Johnny would be definitely one. Edgar Prado, Ramon Dominguez. You know, growing up in the jocks room, you see it from a different angle. You get to see it from, you know, their perspective in the jockey's room on the track. You know, I've known those guys for my whole life, and it's, you know, as for my dad, I get to see them and, you know, get to see how they ride and how they handle themselves. So that's really been a reflection on what I've tried to do for myself.
Growing up in the jocks room, as you said, you got to have all these wonderful idols around you, and what did you learn that was different when you finally got in the saddle? Now that you're on the other side, you're not looking in as a spectator, as Mike Lizzie's son. Now you're in the saddle. What was different that you thought would be didn't? I can't even get the words out.
Yeah, now that you're one of their peers.
Yeah, well, now that you're one of their peers, what's different?
You know, it's a strange thing because we don't play basketball. We're in the same jockey's room, you know. We're all competing. We're all good friends. It's a lot about keeping each other safe out there, too. So, you know, it's a tough game, and as competitive as we are, you know, we're all good friends. We're all best of friends. So it's one of those things that's very different than another sport.
Lane Luzzi, our special guest here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, up for that Eclipse Award for Apprentice Jockey. Those awards going to be given out later this month at the Eclipse Award ceremonies at Gulfstream Park. Lane, do you even let yourself think that far ahead and say, what's that moment going to be like if they do call my name and they hand me that trophy up there on stage?
You know, at first it was. You know, this award's been a goal of mine the whole year. But as I approach becoming a journeyman, my eyes have shifted towards, you know, creating a career for myself for the future. You know, the Eclipse Award would be a great thing. It's a great honor, and, you know, it would be a dream come true. But as I've matured a little bit and rode some more horses, my focus has shifted to just setting a staple for myself to be able to become a good jockey in the future and have a long career doing this.
You know, one thing that we like to do on our trainer talk programs during the week and even our Jock Talk show that airs every single Tuesday night, when we wrap up that show, we like to ask those individuals what else they enjoy doing outside of the racetrack, outside of their profession. So tell us something that people might not know about Lane Luzzi. What else do you enjoy doing? Any other hobbies or anything like that?
You know, I'm in beautiful South Florida. The beach has been kind to me lately, and the weather's been pretty good, so that's one. But, you know, other than that, you know, horse racing's my passion. If I'm not riding horses, I'm watching other tracks. I'm, you know, reading the forum. Just, I can't get enough of this game. This is what I love to do, and it's where my heart is.
Lane Luzzi here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Lane, we really appreciate the time, my friend. Go enjoy the beach, enjoy the racetrack, and enjoy your time in South Florida, and all the best when they announce those Eclipse Awards later this month.
All right, guys, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Keep up the good work. Lane Luzzi here on HRRN. What a class act, huh?
Yeah.
Just like his dad.
Yeah, very much so.
Very much so.
Yeah, really well spoken. And, you know, let's not overlook that, and that's probably something we should have gotten into with him, but the fact that he is so well spoken and so outgoing. I've had a lot of young riders, especially apprentice riders, tell me one of the big keys to being successful is being able to sell yourself to trainers. And Jude, you trained for 20 years. You know that, right?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, it's a rapport thing, you know, with the trainers. And once you have the trainer's confidence, they're going to be relatively loyal. So you have to...
You have to hustle.
You have to be out there every morning. I mean, the king of that was Chris McCarron. Greatest personality for a jockey ever.
Absolutely.
And never, you know, I mean, he kissed more babies and shook more hands.
He could he kissed this baby.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was superb at it, and the same thing in the walking ring when the owners came out. I mean, he knew everybody by name. He asked about their kids. He took an interest in people and really was his own best salesman. He had a great agent in Scotty McClellan, obviously, but when he was in California. But, you know, it was Chris. Chris was the salesman of Chris. And you know, he built a tremendous career, a Hall of Fame career out of that.
Yeah, I guess that's true, not just for apprentice jockeys, but even after you lose your bug, you still have to, as Lane alluded to, you still have to keep proving that you can ride, and you still have to keep selling yourself to the connections, and that's a great way to do it.
Well, I thought that was interesting too, what he said about winning the stakes without the bug. And you know, a lot of people don't realize that in a stakes race you don't get your apprentice allowance, and that's important. And yep. You know, it's it's like a three-year-old winning against older horses. It's a feather in your cap. So, you know, he's got that going for him.
And he's showing he has that ability even without the bug. And those are some big races to be showing up in when maybe a younger rider would be nervous or intimidated and not show up so well.
Yeah, something tells me he's not easily intimidated. Yeah.
He doesn't sound like it. Well, you grew up around the racetrack, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, too. Here he is, a young kid growing up around the jocks room, being in the jocks room all the time with his dad. So he's gotten to know all these different individuals. And I thought your question was very interesting, Jetta, when you asked him about now, what's different now that he has gone from being, you know, that starstruck little kid being around John Velasquez and Javier Castellano and Ramon Dominguez, and now being one of their peers. And that's a completely different position.
It is. And I'm sort of in the same position. I grew up around my dad while he was taking care of horses all those years. And when I finally started to threw my hat into it and started doing the things that he was doing, I had so much more appreciation for what a hardworking man he was. And the things that he was trying to teach me, I was like, oh, well, he actually knows what he's talking about.
The old man.
Imagine that. Imagine that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things that racetrack kids have in common is you know, they do learn from their parents, whoever's in the business. And it's a little bit different relationship than a lot of kids have with their parents who have regular 9-to-5 jobs and that type of thing. So there's pros and cons to having a parent in the racing business. But I think for the most part, there's a lot of positives.
Yeah, very much so.
I agree.
And Lane is certainly the beneficiary of that right now. And take nothing away from him. The kid can ride, and he's doing a great job, and all the best to Lane Luzzi, Jose Ortiz, and all the Eclipse Award finalists, those awards being given out later this month at Gulfstream Park. All right, it is time now for your Blood Horse News update, and then we're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back with a brand-new segment that we're going to bring your way over the course of the next several months through the breeding season, and that is our Stallion Spotlight segment, and we'll be joined by Mark Toothaker from Spendthrift Farm to talk about all of their outstanding stallions. That's all ahead right after your Blood Horse News update. Well, and here we go. California Chrome, he has done it. He's arrived at Gulfstream Park. He arrived at Gulfstream yesterday to continue preparations for a highly anticipated rematch with Arrowgate in the inaugural running of the $12 million Pegasus World Cup on January 28th. Accompanied by a state police escort from Palm Beach International Airport, the van carrying the 2014 Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner drove through the stable gate right around 5:40 p.m. Eastern Time, completing a journey that began at Los Alamitos Racecourse in Southern California early Friday morning. Supervised by trainer Art Sherman's son and assistant Alan Sherman, California Chrome quickly settled into stall 2 in barn 2 on the Gulfstream backstretch, and Alan said he looks great, he traveled well, he's drinking and looking for his hay, he's bright-eyed, he looks good. And that's your Blood Horse News update for this morning. For more industry news and headlines, you can head on over to bloodhorse.com. And don't forget that Blood Horse and Weatherbeast have recently released their new Global Stallions app. This thing's pretty cool. The app has a wealth of continuously updated information on over 700 stallions. The app is free and works with both phones and tablets. Download the app today or go to globalstallionsapp.com to learn more. We'll get to a quick break. Up next, Mark Toothaker with our Stallion Spotlight segment focusing on Spendthrift Farm. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti, a 7-time Grade 1 winner and earner of more than $6 million, is now a classic producing sire and the sire of a Breeders' Cup sprint winner with his first crop.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
In addition to Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint and King's Bishop winner Dre Fong, Gio Ponti is also represented by Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs.
Sir Dudley Diggs and Julien Le Parou. Sir Dudley Diggs has hit the front, and Sir Dudley Diggs from Amiz Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Castleton Lions is also home to Justin Phillip, who retired sound after competing in 23 graded stakes, winning 11 of those, including this dominating performance in the Grade 1 A.G. Vanderbilt at Saratoga.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by 2.
Justin Phillip's first yearlings have been well received in 2016. For more information, visit CastletonLions.com.
Racing fans, come join us this Saturday at Santa Anita as we start down the road to the Santa Anita Derby with the Grade 3 Sham Stakes. We'll also have two other graded stakes, the Las Cienegas and the San Gabriel. Come early Saturday as Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith will sign a beautiful free color poster of Arrogate winning the Breeders' Cup Classic beginning at 10:45 a.m. in the saddling paddock. Admission gates open Saturday at 10:30. First post time is 12:30. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
A Grade 1 winner at 2 and fastest winner of the Grade 1 Cash Call Futurity in nearly 20 years.
Into Mischief wins the Cash Call Futurity!
The sire of three Kentucky Derby colts from his first two crops, including
Golden Sense, the more they asked, the more he gave.
The Louisiana Derby to the Louisiana Bred, Vickers in Trouble!
Into Mischief's biggest and best book of two-year-olds is coming in 2016. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-54.
New to cool more America for 2017, Air Force Blue. A force to be reckoned with. A champion two-year-old by Warfront.
And Air Force Blue now comes bounding through. Two, three lengths clear. A really good horse.
A three-time Group 1 winner, armed with a devastating turn of foot. He's ready to take flight as a sire. It's time to get on board. Coolmore America, home of champions.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And Decked Out flying on the outside. Photo, very close between Sassy Little Lila and Decked Out.
Decked Out, the daughter of Darley Stallion Street Boss, came flying home to take the Grade 1 American Oaks at Santa Anita this past weekend and did it in thrilling fashion under Hall of Fame jockey Kent DeSormo. And that Grade 1 victory makes Decked Out your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Boss, the fastest son of the Great Street Cry. His four three-year-old Grade 1 winners since 2013, which also includes 2016 Kentucky Oaks heroine Catherine Sophia, can only be topped by Curlin, Tappet, and Kitten's Joy. Additional Grade 1 winners by Street Boss include Capo Bastone and Danza in America, plus the quarterback in Australia. To learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You heard that commercial for Washington Hay Company, my good friend Brad Green, in that last commercial break, and so many people heading out to the Keeneland January sale. Don't forget, if you are in need of any kind of hay, straw, you need to call Brad up there at Washington Hay Company in Georgetown. They will take care of you, and they will bring it right out there to the sale for you. They do a great job, so make sure you give him a call, Brad Green, Washington Hay Company, up in Georgetown. Mark Toothaker is going to be at the Keeneland sale, no doubt. He is, of course, with Spendthrift, and this is a brand new segment we're going to debut for you, the first of several to come. Each and every week, we'll take a look at stallions throughout the bluegrass and around the country with the farms that support us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and Spendthrift certainly front and center on that one. And here it is. This is your Stallion Spotlight segment.
It's his way who comes to the eighth pole with a three-length lead. Kaiser Electronica is second. Rodman comes roaring through. Down to the inside goes Rodman. But it is Tis Way by four as they come down to the line. Tis Way takes the Met Mile with style. Chivarelli down inside. Samrat is wicked strong. Comes gobbling up Brown down the center of the racetrack. And here is Wicked Strong, who sweeps to the lead in the final furlong. And Wicked Strong wins it going away as Flat Out continues to bear down on the outside. Clearly now, third toward the rail. They're coming to the finish. And here comes Flat Out, who's full out and on by to take the lead as they Chaffinch's gaining inches on the outside. Golden Sense shifting ground now. Chaffinch just can't get him. Golden Sense, the more they asked, the more he gave. He drifted in the lane, but he won it. Golden Sense takes the dirt mile.
And Into Mischief is the leader. It is Into Mischief, and he is 2.5 lengths in front. Massive drama. Colonel John trying to run him down. Into Mischief wins the Cup of Futurity.
A resurgent, It's My Lucky Day. They're shoulder to shoulder. Prayer for Relief is third. Thrilling finish in the Woodward. Never Say Die, Moreno. It's My Lucky Day. Who won?
Hit It, A Bomb is coming late. Birchwood, Aeroforce, Hit It, A Bomb. In the colors of E.B. Stockwell, rallies to take it for Ryan Moore.
And Lord Nelson sweeps by Old Run in the concluding stages. Lord Nelson, charting a course to the Breeders' Cup, has won by 2.5 lengths.
Mark, I didn't think you'd mind wading through that little montage. Great job by our producer, Lee Delapina, putting that together. Eight of the Spendthrift Stallions focused, highlighted in that spotlight segment right there. There are, what, 27 stallions at Spendthrift? I really had to narrow that one down, my friend.
Oh, Mike, hey, I tell you what, my heart is pounding. It's so exciting hearing those races. And, of course, brings back memories, you know, when you're watching these horses. And a lot of times we've already got them bought when the big races roll around. And, oh, my goodness, I mean, you know, you're so excited and so locked me in that, you know, it just brings back great memories. But, Mike, I appreciate, you know, you and Jude and Jetta and what this new feature you guys are doing. We appreciate you spotlighting the different stallion farms around Kentucky.
Well, and there's certainly plenty to spotlight at Spendthrift. And as I was going through and taking a little trip down memory lane, I also kind of got chills watching some of those race clips and thinking about those moments. And you think about the stallions that you have out there. I mentioned, I guess, 27 stallions here in Kentucky now, Mark, and huge, huge names. Tell me about some of the, you know, obviously they're all stars, but tell me about, I don't even know where you want to start. Tell me about some of these stallions that are really going to have an impact here over the next several months.
Well, I mean, Mike, I guess the horse that, you know, has got us all just so excited about, you know, what could this horse be? You know, could he be one of the, you know, all-time great stallions is Into Mischief. And he's a horse that, you know, started out from humble beginnings. He had small crops. I think he had 42 in his first crop. And from that came two Derby starters and Vijack and Golden Sense. And he had a really good filly in Louisiana sitting at the bar that was such a thrill. And then, you know, Vickers in Trouble the next year. And, you know, he was a horse that we struggled to get any numbers to. And he really didn't have a very big crop until his crop of two-year-olds from this last year in 2016. And that crop had more in it than his first four crops combined. And he was able to finish the year, you know, the leading two-year-old sire in the Northern Hemisphere, finished ahead of Galileo, finished ahead of Warfront. So, you know, you think about that those were bred on $7,500 seasons, and, you know, we finished booking him up this year at $75,000. And so every year, you know, the quality just gets better. The just-turned two-year-olds of this year were $20,000 seasons, and, you know, the just-turned yearlings were $35,000, and the foals that will be born right now were $45,000, and then, you know, just a crazy good book of mares this year, and we just couldn't be more excited about what the future holds for Into Mischief.
Well, he's such an outstanding sire, and you hear people talking about him, and that's one thing, you know, when you're at the sales and you're walking around and people go, oh, I looked at this Into Mischief, you know, you hear that name over and over and over again, and that shows you got something really special.
Well, Jude, I tell you, it's with him, and of course, you were on the racetrack for many years and around it. The thing that I think that he stamps so much with his progeny is that they seem to be very good-minded horses. And I've had a lot of trainers say, you know, look, those Into Mischiefs, they're almost like bomb-proof. You know, they not too much ever bothers them. And probably the other biggest thing for them that is that they stay sound. And, you know, so it's fun to see a horse, you know, like Vijack that's been around the country and continuing to do what he does and from his first crop and it's, you know, it's special when you see a horse, good-minded horses and throwing sound horses.
Mark, I really love how you bring up that good-mindedness. I really look for that in horses when I'm out at the sales looking at horses. And I have to go back one more further to his sire, Harlan's Holiday. And I found that a lot of the Harlan's Holidays were that way, too. So, and I loved Harlan's Holiday. So I really love that connection and how it seems to be just coming straight down the line that way.
Well, Jed, I know I talked to actually Brett Jones yesterday, and we were talking about that as well. And, you know, Harlan's Holiday, what a special sire he was. And I know Brett and those guys, you know, they just did a fantastic job of getting him up and going. And, you know, we're just thrilled with In the Mischief. And then, you know, to have two of his sons there with Golden Sense and Can the Man on our roster. And, you know, both of those horses have freshly turned yearlings now. And so, you know, we're a year away from, you know, seeing if this can just continue on and In the Mischief become a sire of sires. And I just got a sneaky feeling he will. I just, as precocious as he was and as his two-year-old seemed to be, that, you know, I just feel like he's got a great chance to be a sire of sires.
The other thing we can't fail to mention is that he really made some people happy with the Share the Upside program.
Well, shoot, that's the amazing thing. You know, we've brought in four new stallions for this year, and of course, Mr. Hughes allows us to do Share the Upside. And, you know, you've got a horse like In the Mischief that was made available on that. Now, Jude, you know, you're not talking to the sharpest knife in the drawer here with me. I wasn't smart enough to do a Share the Upside on him. And as you know, I wasn't smart enough to stay in on Glittering Tax with your brother while she was carrying Miss Temple City in her belly. I'm selling my half to him, so I'm not the sharpest. But that, you know, the thing is though we all had the opportunity to be able to participate in the Share the Upside with that, and it's very exciting to know that anybody can come out with Spindthrift. And And we announce these stallions, we make room for folks to be able to be a part of that, to earn a breeding ride by. On most of the stallions, breeding to that stallion 2 years in a row, paying two stud fees, and then from there on, you get a free lifetime breeding ride in the horse with no bills. And we have some horses that, you know, you just have to breed to 1 year, and that was the case with your brother and I on Temple City. When we bought that mare, Bob had done a Share the Upside on Temple City, and I had done a Share the Upside on Temple City. And so we bred Glittering Tax on his, and I bred another mare on mine. But we both were able to earn a lifetime breeding right in Temple City by, you know, breeding one mare one time. And, you know, Temple City, you know, two grade one winners on one day was pretty exciting for the farm as well. And he certainly looks like a stallion with a bright future for us as well.
I feel like I'm rubbing salt in the wound when I mention that Miss Temple City is one of three finalists in the female turf division for an Eclipse Award after that season that she had here in 2016. Mark, you look at the other stallions at Spendthrift. You mentioned four new stallions coming in for this breeding season. Tell me about them.
Well, I mean, Mike, I guess was highlighted by Lord Nelson, and you know, we just can't thank our lucky stars for enough on the good fortune we had when we bought him from Mr. Ford at Peachtree. And he's a horse that is extremely talented. I feel like, and of course I'm biased, that I just think that, you know, if the horse would have had the opportunity to run in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, I just feel like the results would have, been him getting his picture taken like Beholder did. And he's a horse that had tremendous speed that could just lay off of crazy fast fractions but still pounce on you at the top of the lane and just explode down the lane. And you know, it's rare to see a horse go 107 and change twice like he did this last year. He won three grade ones. He's a big, gorgeous, beautiful horse. And unfortunately, you know, the racing game can be very cruel. And but we, you know, we feel very fortunate that we were able to win three grade ones with him. Very sad day for us when we got out for the Breeders' Cup and Bob told us the news that he had a leg that had become infected. We had a heck of a time with the horse from that point out. He had to spend about a month in the clinic out there, and I just got to give a praise to the veterinarians out in California as well as Dr. Moorhead from here, that is our vet. You know, they worked tirelessly to basically save Lord Nelson's life, and he's a horse that, you know, just fought, you know, fought to want to live. And we were thrilled to death that that he came through all of that okay. It certainly could have been a different situation. But this horse showed the game as he showed on the racetrack, and we've got him at Spindthrift. He's bounced back very well. We're going to start showing him actually tomorrow at our open house from 1 to 3, and we're looking very forward to having the breeders come out and take a look at what we think is got a shot to be an outstanding top stallion for Spencer for years to come.
Yeah, he should be very, very tough, and he's all part of that stallion roster at Spendthrift Farm. Again, the open house tomorrow. Check it out. You said 1 to 3, Mark?
1 to 3, and we'll have lunch out there as well, Mike. And so we just invite folks to come out. We'll be doing that every day through next Saturday from 1 to 3. And then, of course, folks can come out anytime, you know, after the open house just by making an appointment with us. We normally show between 2 and 3 o'clock each day. Gives us time for our horses to be turned out, come back up, get cleaned up, and be ready, you know, be ready to be shown. And the other three horses that we have, you know, we're very excited about those horses as well. We have Brody's Cause, who is a horse that won 2 grade ones. He won the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland. He came back. He ran a very game third to Nyquist in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He come back. He won the Bluegrass. We had this horse on our radar for quite a while. We wanted a Son of Giants Causeway. He was an expensive yearling, a very pretty horse. And, of course, we are big fans of Dale Romans, and Dale did a great job with this horse. And, you know, Dale, when we were making the deal, Dale, you know, certainly wanted the horse to stay in training and run another year. The horse was back going good, but the boss felt like, you know, hey, he's got a great resume, 2 grade ones. Let's go ahead and, you know, get him to the farm and basically, you know, start letting him earn his money back. And so he's part of our Share the Upside program. You breed a mare to him 2 years in a row for $15,000. You get a free lifetime breeding right in him. If you want to just breed a single mare, he's 12.5. We think that's tremendous value when you compare him to the other Sons of Giants Causeway that are standing in Central Kentucky. He gives you those 2 grade one wins on the resume, and we think that you know, he's got a, certainly is going to have a great chance. All my family that we bought him from is going to support him with mares. Mr. Hughes is supporting him with some awful nice mares, and you know, we think he's a horse that that's got a big shot. And we've also got 2 other horses that this will be their initial year to stand. We have Hit It a Bomb. Hit It a Bomb is a very exciting horse for us, and that he's a Breeders' Cup winner right here in front of the home crowd at Keeneland. He had an explosive turn of foot. He's by Warfront. He's out of a Sadler's Wells mare. Just a horse with great talent. He was undefeated juvenile. He's part of our Share the Upside program, where you breed 2 years in a row at $8,500, or if you want to breed a single mare at $7,000. And then last but not least is Cinco Charlie. And Cinco Charlie is a son of Indian Charlie that was campaigned by Bill Hallibrod, Steve Asmussen training. He was a very fast horse. He actually won 5 races as a 2-year-old and 7 stakes races altogether throughout his career. He shipped around the country. He was extremely successful, very fast horse. We're excited about him and the fact that he will be like Temple City was to one time on our Share the Upside. So a breeder could breed to him one time, pay a $5,000 stud fee. Once the foal is born, he pays that. And then they would be able to breed the Cinco Charlie every year after that for free with no bill. So he's a horse that's almost a, you know, no-brainer to do that and take a shot, especially the way Uncle Mo's going. Indian Charlie certainly looks like he can get a son to sire some runners.
Yeah, I would think so. And all those stallions standing at Spendthrift Farm, along with so many others. You look at Malibu Moon, Tisway, Flat Out. All you have to do is go to spendthriftfarm.com to learn about each and every one of their stallions. You can look at some of their race highlights. It's really a great thing to do, especially if you're looking for that stallion to breed your mare. Head over to spendthriftfarm.com. Mark, appreciate the time, my friend. And by the way, congratulations to Spendthrift and the entire team on that nomination for Eclipse Award winning owner. What a year in 2016. Well done.
Mike, thank you all so much. And we appreciate the notice on that. We just couldn't be happier with the year that we had. Mr. Hughes has put a lot of money in the game. He's done a lot of good for the horse business, and you know, it's just an honor for the farm to be recognized, and I know he's thrilled to death. And want to thank you all again for what you all do. I mean, it's just amazing where how far you guys have come, and we appreciate the service that you provide for horse racing, and you just keep growing and expanding, and really just want to tip my hat to you guys for all that you guys are doing for our industry.
No, thanks, Mark. We appreciate it. Good luck in 2017. Keep it rolling.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Mark Toothaker, Spendthrift Farm. That's your Stallion Spotlight segment. We'll do that every single Saturday over the next several months to bring you an inside look at the stallions standing at major thoroughbred breeding farms around the country and certainly here throughout the Bluegrass. We'll get to a break. We'll come back and take a look at some racing coming up later today. That's in our final segment of the show right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home for the 2017 Pegasus World Cup.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Pin Oak Stud, home to Broken Vow, sire of 2016 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner and Eclipse finalist Champagne Room, as well as other Grade 1 winners like Cotton Blossom, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, and Sassy Image. Also home to millionaire and multiple graded stakes winner Alternation by Distorted Humor. A six-time stakes winner, including the Peter Pan, Pimlico Special, and Oaklawn Handicap. Alternation was represented by his first yearlings, which sold last year for up to $160,000, over 20 times his stud fee. Broken Vow and Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwiches, Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care, just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What do we do?
Leave it to me, sir. Hello, boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Roger.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Roger.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's.
Come in. Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know you...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power.
Anchor Down has taken the lead once again, leaving Myositis Dan behind.
Passion.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish.
Performance.
Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Gainsway is proud to announce the newest addition to their stallion roster for the 2017 breeding season, Anchor Down. A son of Gainsway's perennial leading sire, Tappet, Anchor Down is a multiple graded stakes winner at Belmont Park who defeated Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Tamar Coase in the Grade 2 Kelso with a near track record time of 132.90 while earning a buyer speed figure of 108, the second highest dirt figure of 2016 at the distance. Out of a graded stakes winning 2-year-old, Anchor Down is a half brother to grade one winning sprinter Sweet Lulu, who sold for $3 million as a broodmare, and a full brother to grade one juvenile performer Iron Fist. Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And then Klimt on the outside, fourth, still about four lengths off the lead, and the real sense of urgency now from Bejarano as he pulls the whip on Klimt. Gormley running a great race, straight off his debut win. It's Gormley in front at the eighth pole, more than two lengths. Klimt is grinding into a joint second with Straight Fire, but Gormley with a 2.5-length lead. Klimt in second, but making no real impression on Gormley for the length of the stretch, and Gormley wins the front runner. Klimt second, Straight Fire third, and Midnight Pleasure was fourth.
Gormley, a winner of the Front Runner Stakes back in October, was then seventh in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile on November 5th and returns later today in that Sham Stakes out at Santa Anita. Gormley 8-5 on the morning line in that race for trainer John Sheriffs, and jockey Victor Espinoza. We'll see if he can get back to his winning ways and kick off his 3-year-old campaign later today. We'll talk more about that race in just a minute. Also going to take a look at the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream Park. We will start with that race, but want to welcome everybody to the Equine Forum here. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Jetta Vaughns in our Lexington studios. Guys, very quickly, before we get to taking a look at these races, want to make a couple of announcements and thank some people. Number one, Gulfstream Park. We're going to be heading down there in a couple of weeks to bring you that exclusive coverage of the $12 million Pegasus World Cup. You won't want to miss it. Coverage begins 4:30 Eastern, not only in English, but also in Spanish. HRN and Espanol, our new Spanish channel, going to be broadcasting that race for you as well. And you can join Roberto Rodriguez and Eloy Villalma coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern time, right after we finish here, for Hablando de Abismo, which is their weekly Spanish talk show talking all about racing. You can do that, HRRNEspanol.com. That show, now presented by our friends at Gulfstream Park, Gulfstream playing host to the Clásico del Caribe in December this year, so it makes a lot of sense for them. We welcome them. We thank them for their support of HRN and Espanol. One other sponsor note, Naira Betts is the brand new sponsor of our Friday night weekend stakes preview shows. That's all presented by our friends at Naira Betts and NairaBetts.com. Make sure you head over there and check out their ADW. They will be the sponsor of our Friday night weekend stakes preview show with Jude and with Anthony Stabile. You can catch that show 6 to 7 Eastern time every Friday, Sirius XM. That's Sirius 219 XM 206. And worldwide and podcast on our website.
Yeah, so even if you don't have a chance to catch it, you can pull it up at your leisure.
Yeah, yeah. So we thank Naira Betts for their support of that show, and really looking forward to a big year and tying everything together with the team at Naira. And it makes sense. Anthony hosts the show from up in New York at the Naira racetracks. Jude, you sit in with him to handicap the races down here in Lexington. And the podcast from last night's show is on the website now. So if people want to hear your analysis of the Sham and the Mucho Macho Man, they can go back and do it. They can also hear it in the next couple of minutes because we're going to look at those races.
Yes. So you got a couple ways to go. The Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream goes as the 10th race. And that's a post-time suggestion of 4:34. So we'll see what time it actually goes off. But it's a wild race, very wide open. The weather at both tracks today is a little sketchy. There's chance of rain in Florida, as per usual.
Would you say 4:34 post-time?
4:34
post-time. I'm going to go 4:48.
Wow. Well,
I'm going to say it goes.
You're
at
throwing an inquiry during the day in there somewhere.
Is that the? let's set 4:48 as the over under. We'll see if I'm right on the Mucho Macho Man.
We'll check that out. Wide open race. There's a horse in here that has been on my horses to watch list for a while since he broke his mane last time out at Aqueduct. That was December the 2nd, and he won by 5.5 that day, going one turn mile on the dirt. His name is Cavill, And he's by Elusive Quality out of a Bernardini mare trained by Kieran McLaughlin. Johnny V stays with this horse after a big maiden breaker. I think this horse has some ability. He really looked good winning. It was a race that was originally scheduled for the turf, and it might be the best thing that ever happened to him that he ran on the dirt and won. He's got speed. Beautiful horse. I mean, in a fantastic stride. So looking forward to watching him run today. There's a lot of competition in here, though. We talked about on the weekend stakes preview, Sonic Mule, who's a Calumet Farm horse trained by Todd Pletcher. And Sonic Mule won the Buffalo Man Stakes at Gulfstream on December the 10th on a sloppy track. So if the track comes up off, he certainly can handle it. That was a 6-furlong race. He stretches out to a mile. He's run a mile twice previously. The first time at Monmouth in the Sapling Stakes, he finished third behind Top Tapazar.
Yep.
Easy for me to say.
Say that one fast.
And then he ran second in the Armed Forces to Whiskey Train, who's a son of Bullet Train, and that was on the turf at Gulfstream on October 1st. So he's a horse with a lot of talent. He got a 103 Brisnet speed figure in his last race, and Anthony both and I both thought it would be great to have Calumet have a horse in the Kentucky Derby this year, one that may have a chance, and he's a horse to keep an eye on from the Pletcher stable. Hemsworth is your morning line favorite, Mike says, at 7-2. Tyler Gaffley owned for Tom Albertrani.
Post 11.
This horse won by 9.5 last time, and that was the Nashua grade two. But you have to temper that by saying it was only a 4-horse field. So he went wire to wire. It wasn't the toughest Nashua that we've ever seen, obviously. But you know, he did win, and he won by 9 lengths. So whether you want to take 7-2 or not is the question, especially in a race that's full of contention. There's at least 4 or 5 other horses that have a chance in this race, and it's a real handicapping puzzle. So I'm going to probably bet a little bit on Cavill because I liked him so much, and he's on my horses to watch list. But, you know, I couldn't really argue with anybody that has a different opinion.
I myself settled on the number 8 Sonic Mule as well for everything that Jude said. But the other thing that I really, really liked is that in 6 times lifetime start, this horse has not been off the board. He is extremely consistent. He's always there. And so I settled on number 8, Sonic Mule.
Number 8 Sonic Mule for Jetta. JT going to take a shot with number 6 Cavill in that Mucho Macho Man wide open race.
What 11 price horses, is Cavill, by the way?
9-2 morning line.
9-2.
Yeah, wide open. The favorite 7-2, as I mentioned, Hemsworth from the outside post. Looks like a Breeders' Cup type race when you look at the wagering opportunities available in that one. And Sonic Mule, Jetta's top pick, is 6-1 on the morning line. A couple of minutes left to take a look at the big Derby prep. The Road to the Derby really kind of getting in full swing in California now with that Grade 3 Sham later today. Purse of $100,000. They will go 1 mile on that main track. And, of course, here's Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, who sends out the inside horse in this race. That is American Anthem. Bob looking to add to his record number of wins in this race. Seems like we say that about every big 3-year-old race. But he has won the race 4 times, including last year with Collected.
Yeah, well, American Anthem is a son of Bodie Meister, won his only start. That was at Del Mar on December the 3rd. He got a 94 Brisnet speed figure doing that. It was 6 furlongs. He stretches out to a mile today. Obviously, Mike Smith makes you take notice because all he does is win races. This one's owned by China Horse Club and others, and they are on a major roll right now. So you have to respect American Anthem. Gormley's in there. He won the Front Runner, a grade one, on October the 1st. He then proceeded to bounce or just ran a crummy race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Not what everybody was expecting. He went off at 5-1 that day and he finished 7th, beaten 16. He's been training well for trainer John Sheriffs, who's a very patient guy, and you can expect that he will run well today if he handles a track. Again, it's supposed to be really horrible weather in California. I settled on Big Hit, number 6, for Phil D'Amato. Gary and Mary West owned Colt by Super Saver. out of a hard spun mare. He's on the improve. He got a 90 last time, breaking his maiden at Del Mar.
So. Jetta, how about you? How'd you see the sham?
I settled on Gormley as well. He's established a two-turn stakes winner, and I'm just going to throw out the juvenile. He bobbled at the start. He went four wide. He got tired. That's always a difficult race to win. It's a full field and definitely jockeying for position, and getting caught four wide did not do him any benefit at all. So I'm looking at him to rebound from that and go ahead and take the sham stakes today.
Well, guys, we haven't done this yet in the program, so I know that you've been anxiously awaiting this.
Yes,
119 days, 7 hours, 35 minutes, and 28 seconds away from the Run for the Roses Saturday, May 6th, beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs.
Where would you rather be?
We'll be there, by the way, as your exclusive radio home in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. Looking forward to bringing you that coverage and all of our coverage of the major derby preps coming up over the next several months. You can head over to horseracingradio.net. We'll have that complete broadcast schedule posted. Our Saturdays at Gulfstream schedule is already up there, so you can head over there and check it out. But we're back next week with another brand new edition of the Equine Forum here on HRN. Been fun, guys.
Yep.
Yes.
Want to thank our special guests for being with us. Eclipse Award winner Natalie Voss. Eclipse nominees jockey Jose Ortiz and Lane Luzzi. And Mark Toothaker for our Stallion Spotlight segment. Our poll question is all California Chrome right now. Who gets your vote for Horse of the Year? California Chrome running away with this one, but he'll get a rematch with Arrowgate coming up January 28th in the Pegasus World Cup. And yes, we will be there. For our producer, Lee Delapina and Sean C. Chauncey with our social media. For Jude Fell, Jetta Vaughns, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week. And hey, playoff time. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.